Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 30th day of May, Anno Domini 2026. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. Yeah, we got to get a sound like that.
Yeah, trumpet voluntary of some sort. Yeah. Microsoft is in the process of rolling out a new Windows 11 update that brings with it a number of improvements that will make using your PC feel faster with better responsiveness and more reliability.
Is that the joke of the week?
Yeah. Boom, boom. Thank you. I'll be here all week. Tip your weight, Steph. The update is now generally available as an optional OS update. This is the first OS update designed to make Windows 11 faster under Microsoft's special Windows K2 effort, which is seeing the company focus on addressing criticisms around the OS and delivering foundational improvements. According to the changelog for this release, it includes general OS performance improvements, which accelerate app launch and core shell experiences such as Start Menu Search and Action Center. Additionally, Microsoft says that this update also improves Windows reliability on the sign-in and lock screens in File Explorer when using touch gestures on touchscreen devices and when changing themes and settings. While much of this sounds more like ad speak rather than actual improvements, Microsoft has been testing these changes with insiders for a number of weeks, and testers have noted some genuine performance gains with these improvements enabled. Microsoft said these improvements are rolling out gradually, meaning you won't likely see the performance gains right after installing the update. Instead, the performance improvements will become enabled over the coming weeks as Microsoft makes it available in more ways. Outside of the fundamental performance issues, this new OS update also includes new features such as the ability to share Bluetooth with two devices at once, the ability to name your device during the setup experience, wow, and task manager updates. Please note that this is currently an optional update. Unless you're getting the latest updates as soon as they're available, you won't see this right away. And I know many of you are waiting for the inevitable bugs before you install anything. Our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows Update faster, more responsive? Your choices are, I can't wait. I can wait. I'm skeptical. They can hardly make it slower. And win what now? So far, we've got 27 votes, and win what now is just ahead of I'm skeptical. Of course, you can vote in the poll by heading over to soundbites.org, Bites with a Y. And once you've done that, you can give us a call about that or dang near anything else at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415. I've looked into this update, getting faster stuff, and mostly what they've done so far that I can see is what Linux and the Mac did decades ago. When you first start up your machine, you see a black screen.
Yep.
Then you see the blue screen with Windows is loading, and that takes, I don't know, 3-4 days?
Probably.
Then you get the login page, at which point you put your hands on the keyboard, you log in, or you lean forward and put your face in the screen, whatever you do.
Yeah, your sign on, nothing.
And then you wait another couple of seconds, and the screen pops up. Then you wiggle your mouse till you find your cursor. Then you move it over to either browser or mail, double-click, and now you're doing stuff. What that is psychologically is there's two different times. The second time, from the minute you see the login screen until you're doing something, that's you time.
Yeah,
you're doing stuff. So the fact that it takes a couple of seconds to do this or that doesn't bother you in the least. The time before that, the black screen.
Up to your time.
Up to your time, the black screen, the blue screen, the circling thing. That's Microsoft time. And it is forever. It is interminable. So what they've done is what Mac and Linux did decades ago. They load just enough of the operating system to load the login stuff. Then they show you that. While you're doing that, they're loading everything else in the background.
Just shuffle things around.
They shuffle things around. So now, the time it takes you to actually log in and find your mouse and wiggle the cursor and all that stuff, that's millennia in computer time. So it's plenty of time for the system to finish booting up. That's why this Linux machine boots up in 8 seconds. It doesn't really boot up in 8 seconds. It gets to the login screen in 8 seconds. The same thing with a Mac.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that British Rail had this exact problem decades ago. They did one of those how do you like our service things. And people hated it. They hated it because trains were slow. Trains were slow. That was what people said. So they looked at, can we speed up the trains? Do we put more trains in service? Oh, no. What they did instead is they put electronic signs in all the stations that said, next train, 7 minutes. Before, when you went to the station and you were sitting for 7 minutes, that was British Rail time.
Yep.
And it was interminable.
And it was the worst hour you've ever spent.
Exactly. But when you see 7 minutes, you think, oh, I can make that business phone call. Or, oh, I can read some of my book. Or,
yeah.
And now it's your time.
You can plan your time.
And it's your time, and it goes faster. And then you say, man, I've been here forever. You look up, next train, 6 minutes. Oh, it's only been a minute. I'm an idiot. And you just move on. So it's your time, and Microsoft or British Rail's time is very different.
They're controlling the narrative.
Right, right. And so all they're doing is making their time
your time.
But you know what? It works.
Yeah.
It actually works. And the same thing is true when you do what we call responsiveness, right? Is actually how quickly you change the cursor.
Yep.
So if I click on something and I immediately get the circle or the hourglass or whatever your cursor is that says wait,
mm-hmm.
I'm happy now.
Yep.
The computer's working. But if it takes a second for that to come up, it makes me crazy. And all they did was change when that cursor changes. Done. Finished. It's all psychological, but you know what? It works. And people will be happier. And already, the beta testers, the alpha testers, I guess, we're the beta testers. The alpha testers are more, they're happier with the system as it stands now, with these changes, with these improvements, I guess. So, you know, kudos to Microsoft. They are in panic mode. They realize that people are very unhappy with Windows. They're compared to the Mac and compared to Linux, it's slow, it's clunky, and it's not paying attention to you.
Yep.
So they're making, even these little changes do plenty to make that happen.
And that's why on the Mac, when you're clicking on an application icon, it bounces up and down in the dock.
Yeah.
It lets you know you actually did it. How many times on Windows did you click the Word icon, nothing seemed to happen, so you click it again?
And then you suddenly have
two. And then two copies are running, yeah.
Yep. And on Linux, you can set any one of a million little things like that to happen. Or none if you don't want them, but you get that choice. And yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Just a little visual cue that says, yep, I get it, I'm working on it. It's like when you talk to somebody and you think they're ignoring you. They heard you, but they're finishing something else before they get to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you get that raised finger or an okay sign,
yeah,
then it's okay, I'm in the queue. That's all I want to know. So I get it. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Matt from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Matt. I knew you were going to call.
I just want to say, Nick, how did you like the can, man?
I love that can. I love it. For those of you who don't know, I actually put a picture up on Facebook. Matt was kind enough to send me a beer can. Well, that in and of itself, not a big deal.
Empty.
It was empty, which is a little bit of a bigger deal. But it was also laser etched. Now, when you look at it, you think, well, I don't, so what? But then you put a light in it, a little votive candle or whatever, in it, and it lights up with my face. It's a me. I think it's me. It could be Jack Black.
Could be.
It might be Jerry Garcia, but I'm pretty sure it's me.
It was Buzzo.
Oh, yeah.
It could be Buzzo.
In other words, he enlightened you.
He has enlightened me. Matt, you've enlightened me. Thank you very much. I love it. It's a terrific thing.
I'm glad you enjoyed your presence, sir.
Thank you.
I my electronics luck has been really crappy lately. So I just got a new cell phone, and I busted my Chromebook last week. But I have some show notes when I was listening to you guys last week, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
A couple things. For the people that need a cheap price on a cell phone, I found this service. It's called Telo. You could buy a SIM card for $3 on Amazon. And basically, for $5 a month, you get unlimited talk and text, but it has to be unlocked to T-Mobile. So basically what I did is I went to dumbwireless.com, bought one of my friends a flip phone, because she never has a phone that works. You know, you call the phone, and it's always like, oh, busted line. I was like, geez, can you have a phone that works, Shannon, once in a while? So I got her a phone, $5 a month, $60 a year, you know.
Yeah, not bad.
So, yeah, Telo with the SIM card, and you have to have it unlocked to T-Mobile network. Let me think what else here. Let me see. That was basically it. That's what I wanted to say.
That's good. Thank you, Matt. And again, thank you for the beer can. I told you this. It has pride of place on my shelf. It's wonderful.
Oh, I could Google anything, but you guys are the experts. So you guys know you have the Google phones now do like basically language translation, right?
Right.
Instant live translation. All right, and I have to ask you, Nick, because, like, you're a teacher and a professor and things like that. Now, you know, the U of R, a lot of people speak sign language.
Yep.
Is there any app or anything, because I had a friend who was deaf, is there any app or something that translates live sign language or something like that in that matter by any chance? Do you know of anything that might exist? Because I know there's a lot of deaf students at the U of R, you know what I mean? And I was just wondering if there's like a live translate how to do sign language. Maybe.
I would think more so at RIT, because that's a school NTID.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's something called AIRA, A-I-R-A. But there's also there's a Google app called, an app on Google Play called Hand Talk Translator for ASL.
Wow.
So it translates text and audio to American Sign Language. I don't know if it, and there's a bunch of them for learning sign language.
There's one called Let's Talk Sign. It gives you an animated avatar signing what you're saying, yeah. Available for Android and iOS.
Yeah, but I don't know if it goes the other way.
I just thought it would be like a cool idea, yeah, because like I'm like I really want to explore that and go down the avenue to be able to talk to people like instantly like that. And you know, sign language is a universal language worldwide.
Well, no. There are
differences in some words.
Yeah. Significant differences from country to country.
Even if I've read some amazing issues with British sign language, where something innocuous in America. Well, it's like it's like trousers and pants.
Yeah, yeah, American right. sign language is separate from others. Just like the English and everything else. So, yeah, that's why usually anybody that teaches sign language will say that this is American Sign Language or British Sign Language, because they could be the same but different.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But, there's a lot of good, if you want to really pick up on sign language, you know, because I think it's a beautiful art. I know some sign language. I had, when I was driving for Medical Motors, I had two students that were deaf. And I learned some of the basic sign language in that. And
I think. Sit down and shut up.
Yeah. Some of them. But no, for the most part, I find sign language a very beautiful language. I mean, at Jiva, I find myself, because they usually have a person off to the right signing. And I love just to watch the flow and see what words I can pick up.
And back in the day when I was doing theater for a living, we all spoke sign language backstage because we could talk without disturbing anybody on stage.
My sister when she lived here in Rochester, used to do it for the city court systems in Arundicoit. They'd call her in and she would sign for the courts. And that's a good part-time gig, believe it or not.
Yep.
But yeah, you might want to just pick up some of these books. There's great books on it.
Like one of my friends, he was deaf. I communicated better than him, than regularly people who could speak English, and he didn't even speak. He was smarter than a whole bunch of other people.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's. I find it very, like I say, very personal, and I enjoyed it. I had a gentleman that I worked with at Home Depot back in the day that was deaf. He was a lot person, but he wore a vest, and he didn't have a problem with it, saying that he was deaf. But, you know, I learned a lot from him. Him and his wife were both deaf, and they were great. You know, I went to their wedding, and it was beautiful to watch.
Yeah, I'm finding a lot of apps to teach you sign, but not a lot that translate sign on the fly.
You're stronger if you can sit there and learn the signs yourself. You'll be fascinated on how fast you can pick them up.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, I appreciate you much, but this so tell everybody, all your people that want a good deal on the plan, that Telo Mobile, the SIM card is $3, $5 a month, talk and text. You can't beat it, man.
All right, yeah. Thanks, Matt.
You know. All right.
Have a good weekend, fellas.
You too, man. Bye-bye. Thanks again.
All right, take it easy.
Bye bye. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, Rochester is known, you know, for both the grade school for NTID, which is over there on St. Paul, and RIT for the National School of the Deaf.
Yeah, I had
NTID.
When I first took sign language, I can't tell the story on the radio, unfortunately. Nope, I can't tell this story, but it's a good story. I wish I could tell it to you. It's all about wrong signs.
Well, like I say, my sister.
One of which is football and one of which is not.
Well, one time my sister, she was translating for the Arundicoit court system, guy walked up to her after and started swearing at her in sign language.
Well, you see it all the time when people do a show and they use colorful language. All of them will at some point get a look on their face, walk over to the interpreter, and just start swearing.
Yeah.
Just to see what those signs are. Yeah. My favorite, though, was Red Skelton. I saw him live. Thanks to my friend Brian. And he did this show, and at one point, he walked over to the table, which was next to the interpreter, and took a drink of water, and he said, you know, this is talking for this long is really thirsty work. So he then turned to the interpreter and said, would you like to wash your hands?
There was an episode of Starfleet Academy where a diplomat was mute. And they so he talked with sign, and they had a little computer on his lapel that spoke his sign language. And I'm thinking, well, how does it see? It's on his lapel.
Yeah.
Is it looking far? Okay.
It's magic.
There was an episode of Next Gen where there was a deaf negotiator, and he had a chorus behind him. They were telepathic. And one could read his emotions, one could read his intellect, and catastrophe ensued, and Picard had to save the day.
What a shock.
Yeah.
All right. What am I doing? Oh, I know. We're going back to the phones, and we're talking. What is happening here? Okay. We're back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Pittsburgh, PA. Hiya, Don. What's up in Pittsburgh?
Well, actually, it's Pittsburgh, but I have been traveling. Anyway, a couple questions regarding antivirus programs. If one has one of the programs, either free or paid, Avast, ABG, Total AB, whatever, installed, does that defeat Windows Defender on Microsoft Windows 11?
No. They could run simultaneously, but they should not. If you have any paid antivirus program, you should disable Windows Defender in the settings.
They can fight each other, so each one slows down the other one.
Yeah.
And they can give false positives because one could see the definition list from the other one and think you have a virus.
And Defender is not updated as much as Windows, as the other products.
It is not as updated. Well, here's the first problem. I am installed apps, and it does not list Windows Defender, which is rather surprising to me.
Because it's not an app, it's a Windows feature.
Right, it wouldn't be in the apps. You have to go into settings and security, and you can turn it off there.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, very good. Now, of the three programs that I mentioned, either free or paid, do you have an opinion on which of those three, Avast, ABG, or Total AB, is superior?
No. They're all good.
Yep.
And we've said this many times, every month one of them is better than the other two, and then the next month the other one is better. You know, they leapfrog each other. So, you know, they'll all catch up eventually. All three of them are excellent products, particularly in the paid version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's what is it, VirusTotal that compares 75 or 80 different antivirus programs, and they're all within 1 point or two or the other. And it changes every month as
changes
each one
every month
gets updated, yeah.
So, yeah, you could go to Total, VirusTotal.
That lets you upload a file to see if it's suspicious.
Right, VirusTotal, and look at what they, you know, what they've got there. But as Steve said, next month it's going to be different.
Give me, if you would, that website again. I didn't clearly understand. VirusTotal?
Yes.
VirusTotal.com.org?
Yep.
Which one?
.com.
Okay. VirusTotal.com. And that's a rating of all of them, is it?
No, that is a site where you can upload a suspected file, and it tests it against 70 or 80 known antivirus programs.
Interesting. Okay. All right. VirusTotal, right?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. That's good information. Let me check my list. I think that's about what I wanted to find out. Malware bytes. You have recommended in the past installing malware bytes, right?
Malware Bytes and Super Anti-Spyware. You should have those in addition to an antivirus program.
Because they search for three different types of things.
Right.
Okay, that is Malware Bytes. That's available as a free program or only paid?
Free, and you scan when you want. Pay scans all the time.
Yeah, and we got to go. Got to take a quick break. Thanks for calling. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve, next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Everybody get up.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And I will read some Windows news. The Federal Bureau of Investigation is warning about a fast-spreading scam targeting users of popular Microsoft 365 products like Outlook, Teams, and OneDrive. In a May 21 alert from the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center, the agency warned about Kali 365, a new scam that allows cyber criminals to capture Microsoft tokens to bypass multi-factor authentication without stealing a user's passwords. By stealing what's known as OAuth device codes, digital keys that allow an application to access data without you sharing a password for Microsoft 365 accounts, cyber criminals can gain access to information for a host of malicious activity. CyberScoop reported including data theft, fraud, extortion, and ransomware attacks. You protect yourself the usual way. Don't click anything in unsolicited emails or texts. Check the URL of places you're going. Be careful what you download. A recently disclosed Windows vulnerability is drawing scrutiny for both its technical impact and the fallout between the researcher who exposed it and Microsoft. The situation has since expanded to include claims from the researcher that Microsoft ignored their reports and retaliated after the exploit was made public. The issue centers on a zero-day exploit called Yellow Key, published earlier this month by a security researcher known as Chaotic Eclipse, also known online as Nightmare Eclipse. The proof, or known at home as Papa Eclipse. The proof of concept demonstrates a method for accessing BitLocker encrypted drives on Windows 11 using a USB key. Microsoft has acknowledged the flaw and assigned it an incident ID, but there's no fix. I got a bug against BitLocker anyway. The deadline is almost here. After 15 years, Microsoft will start expiring secure boot certificates on most PCs in June. That's next week, by the way. While users have been told to expect a one-time additional restart, that advice is now different. You will likely need to, and I quote, restart multiple times, end quote, to ensure your PC is secure. The secure boot certificates on all PCs from pre-2023 date back to 2011 when those were initially released. Microsoft is expiring certificates for the first time and issuing new ones. All this is wrapped into April and May security updates. Mac and Linux people have also seen security certificate updates. Oh, by the way, if you're running Windows 10 and not in the ESU, expect lots of problems starting next week because you don't have any of these updates. Microsoft recently made a pretty bold claim in saying that the security tools built into Windows 11 are enough to keep users protected. This was back to one of our earlier calls. It was back in January that the company used an article in the Windows Learning Center to talk about the built-in security provided by Microsoft Defender Antivirus. It suggested that for many users, this level of protection is plenty. In April, Microsoft then reworked this article into a blog post claiming that third-party antivirus software was not needed. Now the company has quietly, with absolutely no announcement, removed that blog post in which it made that claim. Take this as you will.
Many. Well, there's billions of Windows users, so I'm sure 10 or 20 of them are fine with Defender.
That's exactly right. And, of course, you can take us as we are simply by giving us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 800-790-0415. The good thing about Windows Defender is that it is deeply hooked into the operating system. And that's a good thing when you with an antivirus program. The bad thing about Windows Defender is that it's Windows Defender. It's from Microsoft. And they are simply, they,
let's when they get around to it,
they're getting worse and worse at quality assurance.
Mm-hmm.
They just are, and that's a simple fact of life. And as they get worse, your antivirus protection gets lower. So my suggestion is don't use Windows. I there was a point when I used to say Windows Defender was indeed all you needed. It was excellent. It updated multiple times a day, and it was excellent. None of that is true any longer.
That only lasted for a few months.
Yeah.
But then they fired that team.
But it was there. It was there.
Oh, yeah. But they fired the team.
They fired the teams, and now everything is done by AI, and there's no quality assurance anymore. And so we can, in good conscience, no longer recommend Windows Defender as your antivirus
solution. Well, it's just like anything else. I mean, Microsoft is so well known for bringing out a product, hyping it up, getting folks to use it, and then dumping it. Microsoft Money. How many folks bought into that one? Or Microsoft Paint. All these programs that they hyped up, got people to spend the money on, and then they dropped them, you know, the support first, and then dropped the whole program. Told you, go look elsewhere. We don't care. We got our money.
I still have a floppy disk of Microsoft Access back when it was a terminal modem program.
And fit on one floppy disk.
And fit on one floppy
That's
disk.
That's an oldie.
Yep.
That is an oldie.
That is an oldie. But yeah, so the reality is that Windows Defender is no longer something that we feel comfortable recommending. That doesn't mean it's a bad program. It's just not top of the line.
Yeah, I mean,
and even some of the top of the line programs, McAfee and Norton, are the two big names. Because they're the big names, the bad guys don't release something until it can get past the two big names.
They know their release date, and they like you've said before, Steve, they wait until the day after. They know they're going to release, say, on a Tuesday. All right, they wait until Wednesday. They don't care.
They don't care.
Yeah. They can still infect your machine and get the stuff out there.
That's right.
So,
be aware that like we said, Windows Defender is running on your Windows machine. And if you would rather run a different antivirus, one of the things you should do is turn off Windows Defender, which you do in the security section of the settings.
A lot of times the installer of your other antivirus program will turn it off for you, or ask if you want to turn it off.
Yeah, we'll ask if you want to turn it off.
And as we've said, viruses aren't the only threat. In fact, their trend is they're downward.
The problem is things live forever on the internet, so there are still a lot of viruses out there, but they're not writing new ones.
So that's why you want Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware to scan for other issues.
And one of the other things, though, even though you turn off Defender, don't be alarmed. Microsoft is still going to nag you constantly from time to time. Hey, Defender's off. You want us to turn it back on?
Right.
You can just click the little X up in the upper right-hand corner, say goodbye.
Yep, just no thank you.
Yeah.
Also, there have been Windows updates that turned it back on again.
Oh, yeah.
So every month when you do a Windows update, go back in and check that it is still turned off.
They make a version for the Mac called Microsoft Defender for some reason.
Huh?
For Microsoft shops that have a Mac, and there's a corporate policy that you must have Windows Defender running, I think it's okay.
I use Clam AV, and it's never failed me.
Yep.
And that's available for every operating system as well. So, but it is a manual run unless you're paying for it. So,
I mean, I still use Avast.
Excuse me.
Still like that, along with Super Anti-Spyware, Malwarebytes, which I pay for both of those.
Of course.
So they just automatically do it because, one, the viruses are still, like you said, still out there. They're laying somewhere. You don't want to not have a virus protection. But the big thing nowadays is the Super Anti-Spyware and the malware. Because what they're doing is they found out that they didn't make much money on viruses, so they're writing these little programs that'll go in and steal your email list.
It's easier to claim you have a virus and call tech support and take your money.
Yeah.
Than to actually write the virus.
Find ways to scam you.
Yeah, ransomware is a service. You don't even have to have any programming skills now. You can hire somebody else to attack a company and ransom them.
Yeah.
Or the other thing, too, though, is they'll write a program, a little program, sit back while it goes out and steals people's email lists. And then they can turn around and sell those email lists to spammers.
Or use it themselves.
Yeah, or use it themselves. But they usually make, you know, put out on the black web, the dark web, hey, I've got a million email address. Who wants to use it, you know, to spam this or that? You know, and they'll sell them. And they're making money. All they did was write this little program. It goes out and looks, sniffs your machine to see if you're vulnerable. Otherwise, they just suck those in. And then all of a sudden, you start getting these emails. I didn't ask for this. Who's?
Yeah.
Or, I know that person. And then all of a sudden, bam, you're infected.
And you have to kind of get out of the habit of being nice. You get an invoice saying you owe this money. Oh, I better tell them it's not. I didn't buy that. No, it's a fake invoice. They're going to steal your money.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I get all the time, the system administrator of AskNick.com has shut off your system.
Yep.
No, he didn't, because he is me.
Yeah.
And I didn't. I just ignore him, throw it away. Or your domain is going to expire. All my domains are with one company. That email wasn't from that company. And all my domains auto-renew. So, no, it isn't an issue. But that's scary stuff. It's going to expire in 10 days. You have to do something right now.
A couple things that I've gotten lately, I love my Pixel phone. Because I can sit there and say, you know, scan it. And I have gotten, I think this past week, 3 different notices that my Visa bill is due. And they say this amount. And if I don't do quick action or contact them at this particular number, they're going to have to file a suit against me because the money is owed. There's only one problem. I don't have a Visa card.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, you can go online and check your Visa balance.
Yep.
I check.
And not see it.
Like I say, I am maybe paranoid. But every morning, yeah, I go in and check my banking.
Yeah, don't wait till the bill comes in the mail. You know, because then the bad guys have had up to 30 days to steal your money.
Almost everybody can do online banking now.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you have to do anything with your online banking, but you can look at your statement online.
Yeah.
I do that every morning and every evening.
Yeah, I check it. In the morning, I sit there, open up my banking account, and I open Money Dance. And I compare the two. I see what's come in. I go, okay, that one finally cleared. Boom, boom, boom. I'm always synced. Every day to the penny. My late wife would probably roll over in her grave right now because the way
resurrect herself and pat you on the head is what she do.
No lie. I mean, she used to be horrified the way I used to round off numbers. And how do you ever balance? Of course, she was a CPA.
Right.
Then it helps when I forget to get a receipt and then forget to enter it into my Quicken and shows up in the bank statement. Oh, yeah, okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Like I say, every morning, it's like I'm sitting there with my coffee.
Yep.
The other day, I couldn't get it to reconcile. Now I'm going back and trying to find the last time it did match and what. Found out I entered a charge twice.
Yeah.
And that's why it wouldn't reconcile.
Yep.
Well, yeah. See, you buy something on the 8th and it doesn't post until the 15th. Why?
Well, exactly. I've had that. Usually it's a Friday to a Monday, and that I But you're right. When it's like a 2 weeks, what the heck is that all about?
What are they doing? Sitting on it? Yeah, well, it's not going to grow interest.
It used to be, so it sits in your credit card machine, and companies pay a fee for every transaction in the credit card machine. And a couple of the services that we don't use anymore charge you that fee every day.
Wow.
So it used to be, you got a $10 charge in there. Now I don't need to batch out. It's only $10. And then the second day, they charge you that 3% again. So we got to make sure we batch out every day. But now we've run into the problem. We use a service that close their cutoff date is 6 p.m. So if we run a charge at 6:01 p.m., it goes tomorrow, and then that makes the bookkeeping tricky because.
Yeah.
The report from tonight shows it's in the register, but not when it gets reconciled at the other end.
Right. I pay with my watch for almost everything now, and you know it shows up real quick, and I like that. I like that a lot.
Well, one thing I just found out though was evidently my card, you know, because I got a debit card with my bank. And it must have a limit on how much I can spend during the day, I just realized.
Yeah, a lot of the, especially debit cards, it's a part of the fraud protection. A
single, well, because a single charge, I ordered something charge. In the morning, I ordered something online. It was a couple hundred bucks. Then I had to go to the dentist to pay for a root canal.
Mm-hmm.
That was one arm and my firstborn.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, so then after that, I went to go to dinner. And all of a sudden,
that's an expensive day.
Which the dinner was only like $26, and they go, "Sorry, that was declined."
Yep, and it's different. It's different for every bank, so you have to check with your bank to see what their daily limit is.
And you can raise the limit, but that's a pain too. It just exposes you more.
Well, it's not like I'm going for root canal.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, and if I'd known that, I would have used the other card, which I have.
Right.
But it's like, okay, I learned that lesson quick.
Yep. So, yeah, there's a lot to it. But you really should reconcile quite regularly because it's kind of important. When I set up my card, the cool thing is Google puts money in your account. When you set up a card, Google gives you money.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time I did it, it was 2 cents. So you go in and you say, yeah, you gave me 2 cents on this date. And they go, okay, that's your card. That's you.
Yeah, and they take it back. Yep.
This time when I did it, they gave me 55 cents.
Ooh.
Okay.
Inflation.
I'm going to put in another card.
But the thing of it is, folks, there is, you know, inexpensive programs like we've touted, you know, Money Dance, which is across all platforms, whether you're Linux, Mac, PC, you know, you can even on a Chromebook run Money Dance. And it's just like Quicken, but you don't have to pay that yearly fee. Once you have a version of Quicken, if it's working for you, you know, they might come out with another one that might highlight it. Here's the thing, though. Money Dance is worldwide. So they're making changes sometimes to some of the other countries that might not affect you. You can look over what the enhancements are, decide whether you want them. It's really not that expensive, nor do you have to do it. If it's working basically to do your needs, you're not running a business, you're just doing a home business. I have not updated in a while. There is one more update, but hey, I don't need those other features. Because what it was going up automatically and checking my balance and downloading it and that for me. No, I like to put eyes on my account. So that's why I opted not to. It's working fine for me.
And unlike Quicken, Money Dance is a one-time purchase.
Yep.
And it gives you $65. You get this release and the next major release.
Yep.
Which you can keep using forever without upgrading ever again if you want to.
And like I say, I haven't upgraded. This one, the last one that I had came out 3 years ago. And there was another update, and I looked at it, and I didn't need it. But yet, it's still working for me. Back when I had Quicken, they've gone to now where you now have to pay a subscription fee, and it's up in cloud storage, and they have control of it. If you don't pay the yearly fee, they cut you off. You can't use the program, and all your records
are gone.
Yeah.
That's why I've stuck with the last version of Quicken. So two-thirds of the screen says your membership has expired and renew now, but I can still use it because I don't want to put it up there, and I've Money Dance doesn't import from Mac Quicken very well.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But I haven't tried it yet, but someone said if you export your Mac Quicken to Windows Quicken,
yeah,
and then import to Money Dance. That might work.
Oh, it will, because I took my Quicken account, exported it, and then moved right on over, because I knew I was coming up on that yearly event again.
Oh, yeah.
And you, you know, I checked out the Money Dance, so I downloaded the file. And I already got Money Dance all set up and ready. And I sucked that file in. And I've been using it ever since. And, you know, I kept getting these notes from Quicken. You know, we're going to be shutting off your account. And I kept going, goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't need you.
Quicken is a decent program. We're not saying it isn't. It's a very good program.
Nothing wrong with it.
There are others that are as good for most users.
Yeah, if it was just me, I probably would have already upgraded to Money Dance, but I have to generate reports for the board members, and if something changes, they'll go nuts. If the report doesn't look exactly like it did last month.
Speaking of which, we should probably mention that we will be meeting tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. In the lounge. The lounge was running on one piece of software. Now it's on another piece of software. And the first meeting we had after the changeover was all about, where is this? How do I do that? What about this? Okay.
So now the second meeting will be all of the avatars and overlays you can put on.
Yes. So, yeah, join us tomorrow night. The link is on our website at soundbites.org. It says the Soundbites Lounge, and you can join us there at 9 o'clock tomorrow night. We'll be there from 9 to 10, answering your computer questions and just chit-chatting away as we normally do about whatever. It's pure stream of consciousness.
Whatever comes up.
Whatever comes up, we don't care. It's a lot of fun, and it's a nice, quiet hour in the privacy of your own home. So, it's a good time. So join us. Join us tomorrow night at 9 in the Soundbites Lounge. 9 o'clock Eastern. For those of you not in the Eastern time zone, it's 9 o'clock Eastern.
Listening from other time zones.
Right. Join us. We'd love to have you. We'd love to have you ask your computer questions or whatever you want to do. We'll be there. It should be fun. But there are a lot of programs like Money Dance. Programs that emulate other pieces of software that are commercial and cost a lot of money, and then these programs are either free or very inexpensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, we've been talking about Lightroom and programs
Dark,
like that.
Darktable.
And Darktable is a replacement for that, and it is free. And the people who use it tell me it does everything you need it to do. So
that, like, Macro Hard is a replacement for Microsoft.
Microsoft, yeah, exactly. find there's a site called alternative2.net, and we've had it in our link list for a while, where you can look up alternatives to programs you're already using, and you can look and you can sort them. You know, you can filter them by a particular operating system or free. Or, you know, whatever you want. You can find alternatives. Like, for example, LibreOffice does everything 99% of the people who buy Microsoft Office will ever do. There's always the edge case. There's always that 1% of people who must have some feature that isn't available in the free software. Okay. Then you can't use the free software. Yeah. Get over yourself. But for everybody else,
I was going to say that margin is, you know, that
slim.
Number is so slim. You know that not even you know.
Yeah,
that's the other thing though with like Microsoft 360 and all these others. You know, 365. Most of folks, if you've got an older version of, say, Word or Excel or all that, and it's working fine for you, stick with that. Because all you're paying for is a lot of fluff that probably you won't use. You know, I mean, like a Word document. If you're just writing letters and everything else, you don't need all that other stuff.
You don't even need Microsoft 365. There's alternatives.
Yeah, there's so many others. Like you said, LibreOffice and... Google Chrome. You know, I mean, Google Docs. You know, I mean, that's free.
And the Chrome OS. Most people don't need anything more than a browser.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all they ever use. You can do your email in a browser. Okay, that was very, very subtle. You can do your email in a browser. You can do your browsing, obviously, in a browser. You can do pretty much everything in the browser. And Google Chrome does all that. It also runs Android apps. And it just, you know, you can do what you need to do. You don't need to spend hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars on a high-end Windows machine to surf the web and do your email. All right, listen, we're going to take a slightly longer break. The first hour of this show is done, but there's a whole other hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way, a whole other hour of Dave Enright, a whole other hour of Steve Ray, a whole other hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole other hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, or toll-free at 800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Do not go too far away.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites. Right here. On member-supported Jazz 90.1. Before
Did
we get to the phone.
Did you forget for a second?
What?
Did you forget for a second?
No, I remembered. I was just, it was a dramatic pause.
Dramatic pause, not a forgetful pause.
Not a forgetful pause.
I mean, you can never tell at your age.
That's true. Just assume they're all dramatic. Before we get back to the phones, I do want to point out my friend Rich pointed me to 1-800-CHAT-GPT. You can now call ChatGPT.
And say what?
Wherever you want. It's a chatbot.
Ask some question, yeah.
Ask it a question. Discuss your marital issue. I don't care what you do. You can do it to 1-800-CHAT-GPT. Now, there's a major limit of 30 minutes a month from any one phone number. But I suppose if you've got multiple phones,
yeah,
you can call as often as you like. But, you know, for those, you know, the Bloom County had a running gag where Opus, the penguin, used to call Dial-A-Mom. Now you can call 1-800-CHAT-GPT.
Woz used to have Dial-A-Joke for 40 years, forever, yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Rochester, New York. What's up, Mark?
Well, you folks tried to help me before, and I want to go back over a couple of things.
Okie doke.
Okay, I'm planning on putting Mint 22.3 on a computer, and it's going to need to be put on by way of a USB.
Yep.
Now, from what I've come across is everybody wants to suggest Rufus. But Rufus is set up for Windows, last I heard.
Yes.
Okay.
And what operating system are you currently using?
Right now, this is going to be on a whole different computer. But the one I have right now is running Mint.
Okay, so you're running Mint. You want to create
20 point something,
right? That is absolutely doable. There are a number of programs that will do that. The one that I there are a couple. XFBurn will do that.
I use Belina Etcher on the Mac.
Bolero? No, not Bolero. Bracero.
Etcher has a version for Linux as well.
Belina Etcher.
Yeah.
That's the one. Belina Etcher is the one I use.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. Do you run Etcher first, and then you put in the
what you do is OS? Yeah, what you do is this. You download the ISO file for Linux Mint.
Yes, I did that.
Then you open up Bracero. And you
Bolero.
Belina Etcher. Doggone it. And you have three buttons. The first button is essentially what ISO do you want to burn. You click on that, and you pick the Linux Mint ISO. You download it. Then the second button is where do you want to put it. You click on that, it shows you all your drives, and you pick the USB drive you plugged in.
Okay.
And then the third button is go.
I see. Okay, now should I have them all put on the same USB stick?
No. It overwrites the USB with your image. So if you'd write a second image to the same USB, it overwrites the first one and just makes the second one.
Right.
You can do you can't do partitions, really.
So Belina Etcher runs on your desktop, runs on your computer.
Okay.
It is a regular program just like LibreOffice or anything else.
Okay.
So you install Belina Etcher. And then that runs and burns the ISO to the thumb drive, which you then...
I see.
Then you remove the thumb drive just like you would any other thumb drive, right? You undock it, detach it, eject it, whichever your system tells you.
Right.
And then you boot the other machine with that drive... And it is a live CD. It's a live CD, right? It's a live flash drive. And it automatically boots into Mint, which you can then use right from the USB, but it'll be very slow because it's all compressed on the USB drive and it's moving at USB drive speed.
Right.
Or one of the desktop icons is install. And then you can install it and go from there.
I see.
I have found when I'm looking for USB drives, they're all USB 2, which is cheap.
Yes.
But slow. If you want to be faster, find USB 3 drives, but they cost more.
Right. And you can get USB A or USB C.
I like ones that have both. You never know what computer you're on.
Right. But again, depending on what you've already got, you don't need anything particularly large. Do pay attention. Linux Mint, I believe, requires an 8-gig flash drive. But check the specs.
It's on a 64.
Okay, you'll be fine.
I got plenty of room.
You'll be fine.
Okay. I also had been told that Mint usually comes with something very similar to Etcher, apparently, on the system. Is that true?
I have used... Mint. I have it on my laptop, but I have not specifically used that. But you can create bootable media right from Linux. Oh, of course you can. I do know this. I beg your pardon. So what you do is in Linux Mint, you've already downloaded the... this is even easier. You've already downloaded the ISO file, correct?
That is correct.
Right-click on it and select Make Bootable USB Stick. I forgot. Linux Mint is so easy to use.
Okay. Now, I've already have the ISO, so I can go in and I can do this, and it will add something to it?
It will replace everything.
Start over again?
It will... when you write an ISO to a USB... flash drive. It replaces everything on that USB flash drive. It wipes it out, erases it completely, and installs the ISO file on it.
Like you bought a CD with the installer on it right. in the olden days.
Right.
Or a floppy disk.
Don't use one that's got stuff you want or that isn't backed up somewhere else.
Okay. So, in other words, I should get my ISO, and when it goes to download it onto the stick,
Don't download it onto the USB stick. Download it to your main hard drive.
Right-click on it and select Make Bootable USB Stick.
I see. Okay. Put it to the hard drive. Okay.
Yeah. So it goes into your download folder.
Hard drive.
What?
Pardon?
It goes into your download folder when you download it.
Right.
So just open up your download folder, right-click on the ISO file, and select Make Bootable USB Stick.
Okay. Okay, then I should be all set.
There you go.
Great. Thank you very much for putting it straight in order for me. Thank you very much.
Enjoy. I do like Linux Mint. I've been using it more and more. I hadn't remembered that that's how you do that. Okay, thanks.
Great. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
By the way, the program name for the writer on Linux Mint is either USB Image Writer or Mint Stick, depending on which version you have. So USB Image Writer or Mint Stick. And that's just built in, so you can just right-click. It should be, I believe it installs with the system, so you can just right-click on any ISO you've downloaded.
Yep.
And go. Yeah, pretty nice. It's pretty nice. I do like Linux Mint. I've been an Xubuntu or Xubuntu, I don't care how you pronounce it, user for decades. So it is the one I'm most familiar with, and it's the one I use on my desktop at home. But I have Linux Mint on my laptop, and I really like it. I really do like it. It's much easier to use than almost every other Linux I've used. It has a lot of features that are built in that I haven't really explored yet, like this right-click to burn a USB stick. So it's pretty nice. If you're looking to get started with Linux, Linux Mint is a good choice. There are a lot of good choices. I don't mean to diss your favorite choice. I am not insulting you or your taste in Linux distributions. I just happen to like Xubuntu, and I like Linux Mint. I also like Zorin. So
what kind of mint, though?
Cinnamon.
I'm partial to Wintergreen.
Yeah, so am I. Actually, if you're talking about lifesavers,
yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Will, all the way from Hampton, Virginia. Hiya, Will. How are things in Hampton?
Life's good, Nick. I just got my associate's in IT from Virginia Peninsula Community College, so I'm happy.
Congratulations. Congratulations. Well
Thank
done, you.
You.
And the crowd goes wild.
Thank you.
Well done. Good for you.
You know something? It is a fact that Microsoft has fired all those people, but in so doing, what they have effectively done, and this reminds me of something that I learned in my modern humanities class. The French author Barthes talked about the death of the author, and that's what we're seeing here.
Yep.
Microsoft, in firing all those people, like you said, they have the AI doing the QA. But the problem is that the source code has scaled up so much in its complexity that even the AI can't possibly keep up with that. You need some sort of human intervention.
Yeah. The one of the problems with Windows is it is so extremely monolithic. Everything is dependent on everything else, and it's all in one giant file, and it's really It's become unmanageable.
Yes.
You know, back when it was DOS, it was easy. The reality is that no human mind can comprehend anything more complex than a lever. And so you need to break problems up into pieces to really understand them. And the interplay between those pieces are more complex than the pieces themselves.
Indeed, they are.
That's a problem. Yeah.
That's one of the jokes about AI can never replace programmers because it depends on clients giving exact descriptions of what they want.
Yes. Our jobs are safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Microsoft has saved money by giving a lot of their functions over to AI, but they have also really gone downhill in terms of quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's quality assurance, all right, just not good enough.
Right. And you know what? The reality is that they are doing their due diligence. Their job is fiscal responsibility toward their shareholders. They're saving money every month by firing all those people. Shareholders get bigger cuts every month. They're happy. That is exactly what Microsoft should be doing. It is their job.
Yeah.
True.
It's true.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're the product. And nobody cares about the product.
We just do free beta testing.
Yep. Yeah.
I thank the Lord every day that you guys turn me on to Linux.
Well, it's our pleasure. And again, Will, congratulations. Good for you. You're hurtling headlong into the rest of your life, and it's going to be very exciting.
So you go. What's next for you?
I'm going to transfer to Old Dominion University in Norfolk.
Oh, you're moving to Norfolk. Well, you're going to call us from Norfolk.
I'll still be in Hampton. I'm going to go online.
Oh, all right.
Okay. Well, good luck.
I was about to say, you've got everybody in Hampton, VA listening to us now. Now you got to get everybody in Norfolk.
I'm working on it.
All right. We appreciate it, our friend.
Thank you, my friend.
All
keep
right,
smiling, will you? And good luck.
Definitely. Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. I love to hear that.
Hey, you keep smiling. Makes folks wonder what you're up to.
Exactly right. I have used Linux Mint, and I like it more and more every time I play with it. And I have to say, particularly for the new user, it is much, much easier to use than most every other version of Linux. And if you're looking to get into Linux, Linux Mint is a good starting point. And it does have a lot of nice features, also a lot of nice eye candy if you've got a decent graphics card and a fast enough processor. But without those, obviously, it's not going to be that good for you. But like I said, I've been using Ubuntu, specifically Xubuntu, for decades, and it is the one I'm much more familiar with. So I tend to.
Yeah, XSFC is the one you turned me on to.
Yeah. It's very lightweight, which means it works really well on older machines. This machine, which is, as I said, 14 years old, is running XFCE, is running Xubuntu, and it is fast, and it is lightweight, and it is responsive.
Well, I've got it on my Pi 400.
Yes!
And it boom.
Super fast.
Yeah.
Super fast.
Love it.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, a couple of things. One, Dave's image is frozen on the YouTube channel.
That's we prefer okay. it that way.
Yeah, I do.
I know. Yeah.
I just thought you were sleeping.
Yeah. in a trance. I have the G-R-Sync on my Libra. On my Linux machine.
Yep.
And I have the GUI.
Right.
I do not see an option to do one. I can't do more than one folder at a time. And two, I don't see any option for automatic updates on that GUI. You have talked about doing it you know, or through commands, which I'm nowhere near that level yet. May never get there.
Oh, you'll get there.
I have looked at, I know you use Python.
Yeah.
And I've also found through some searching that I could create a bash for doing all that I need to do, and I'm nowhere near that yet, but I was looking. One of the problems I have with finding stuff either online or YouTube channels is that they blurt out a bunch of jargon that I'm not familiar with, and I can't stop them and ask them, what is that? What exactly is that? What exactly is a bang? You know, stuff like that I have to stop the thing and go to another, you know, go to my computer and Google it, whatever. So I'm really, I guess I'm going to the thing that's waiting for that class of yours to begin.
Life has gotten in the way a little bit.
Yeah, I hear you. So I am, unless there's an option to do it with the GUI, is there an option to do automatic, and is there an option to do more than one pull at a time? That I'm just not seeing.
To do multiple folders, you mean?
Well, that and an automatic, you know, every Sunday night at midnight, back up everything. I don't need to back up all the files, so I wouldn't back up the home directory because it has a lot of stuff in it that I don't need to back up.
Right. What you want to do is yeah, unfortunately with GRSync, you can only do one folder at a time, but you can create multiple sessions. So what you're doing when you use GRSync is creating a session.
Okay.
And then you can run those sessions using a bash script. I'll write some. Do me a favor and email me, and I'll write something up.
Okay. You know, I wouldn't be objecting using a bash script on the terminal.
Right.
You know, that would be perfectly fine. I'm getting more and more used to the terminal, so it's like it's in some cases easier. I tried to download GRSync from my programs are the, what do you call it, the GUI on the, God, I'm gone brain dead. The GUI that gives you all the list of software.
Right.
Ubuntu software, the little folder thing. A briefcase. And it just kept circling and circling and circling and couldn't find it. Then I found out how to install it with the terminal.
Right.
And then just for giggles, I went back to the updates, Ubuntu software, and it found it after I installed it.
Nice.
So it was like, I don't know what's going on with that thing, but I it was so simple to do on the terminal.
Yeah.
You know, I did a search. I'm using Brave. I did a search for the software. It gave me the text to use.
Yep.
You know, so I copied and pasted, and lo and behold, it worked perfectly.
Yeah. Once you learn how to do it, it's real fast and real easy. I should tell you that if you open up the main GRSync window, at the very top are sessions. You can create sessions by clicking the Add button, and then you'll have multiple sessions, which you can then run individually.
Okay, so I ran all the folders one at a time under basic operations.
Right.
Because at first I was going to do the home folder, and I looked at how much was going to be and how long it was going to take, and no, that's not what I want to do. I just want it to go, you know, basic. I do have more on my desktop than I should have.
Yeah, look, I will absolutely, yeah. I will send you instructions on how to do it. I use rsync from the command line in a cron job every day, and it backs up to three or four different places,
right.
And it's easy and fast and convenient, and I will send you that information with clear instructions. Send me an email to remind me.
I have a 5 terabyte spinning drive. I have pCloud, and I have my Google account.
Perfect.
So I can go to I usually go to all of those. So
perfect.
All right. Well, thanks.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
You can never have too many backups.
That's exactly right. That is exactly
never
right.
Enough.
Yeah, I use rsync. It's a command line. Grsync is the graphical rsync front end, but it uses rsync in the background. And what rsync does is lets you synchronize software. Now it actually can do backups in that you can tell it just add new files or just, you know, don't delete. If I delete something from my home directory, don't delete it from there, just add. But that gets really unwieldy depending on, you know, what it is you're doing. And you can do multiple directories and multiple files and et cetera, et cetera. So I tend to use the command line a lot because when I started with Linux, command line was way, way more important than it is now. And so I use rsync regularly. I set up a cron job, which is like a timed batch file. It just goes off every day.
At a certain time.
In my case, at like 3 a.m. and backs up everything.
And the one thing, though, in talking about backups, if folks don't back up anything at all, the critical folder that you always want to make sure that is backed up, no matter what, are photos.
Very hard to get photos back.
Documents can be recreated. Photos cannot, folks. And I can't tell you, in all the years that I had my shop open, the number of times that folks were so brokenhearted because they lost photos.
Baby, a deceased parent.
You can rewrite, you know, if you were writing a letter to somebody and, you know, that type of stuff. But the photos, I'm sorry, are just something that you cannot get back.
Yeah, and you're right. Nothing breaks your heart more than I lost all the pictures of my grandparents. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just a few.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
All right, remain calm. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. For 25 years, the world's most recognizable search bar has remained virtually untouched. That era is now over. Google has rolled out its most sweeping overhaul yet, powered by artificial intelligence that doesn't answer your questions. It acts on them. The implications for users, advertisers, and the broader internet are only beginning to surface. Google unveiled a series of artificial intelligence-powered changes to its search engine on Tuesday that fundamentally alter how users interact with what has long been the world's most used entry point to the web. The announcement, anchored by a new version of the company's Gemini AI model, signals a structural shift in a business that has operated largely unchanged for a quarter of a century. In an entirely unrelated note, DuckDuckGo installations are up 30%, mainly because of their AI-less search page at noai, duckduckgo.com. That's noai. duckduckgo.com. DuckDuckGo said U.S. app installs went up 18.1% week over week on average during the May 20th to May 25th period. The company said that growth was sustained for six consecutive days and peaked at 30.5% on May 25th. On iOS, the rate of install is even higher, with week-over-week growth hitting a 33% average, peaking at 69.9%. The page turns off every AI feature, like AI-assisted answers and AI-generated images, by default. A spokesrobot pointed out that Google offers a web filter on search for those who just want to see a list of blue links. DuckDuckGo offers its own AI product called DuckAI. It's free and doesn't require users to make an account, but provides access to a bunch of models. All chats are private because DuckDuckGo strips the user's IP address before requests reach model providers, deletes conversations within 30 days, and prevents chats from being used for training. I love DuckDuckGo. Google just rolled out a new security feature for Chrome aimed at attempts by hackers to thwart two-factor authentication. DBSC stores session cookies on your device's security chip, preventing hackers from accessing them. Hackers steal session cookies to impersonate your login session on their own device, which allows them to bypass two-factor authentication. This feature appears to be rolling out automatically, but only for specific versions of Chrome. As long as you're running the latest version of Chrome, people looking to break into your account should now face a steeper uphill battle. AI content creation tools like Google's new Omni model threaten to make reality even harder to discern from AI fantasy, but YouTube is taking an important step toward verifying video origins. After debuting wishy-washy AI content labeling in 2024, Google will begin using more prominent labeling for AI videos, and the site will no longer rely entirely on uploaders to divulge when they use AI tools to create a video. Starting this month, YouTube will use new internal signals to flag AI content. This will apparently apply to videos that show significant photorealistic AI use. When applied, the new labels will also be in a place where you'll actually be able to see them, as opposed to hidden under multiple layers of clicking. Remember, we're not AI, as far as you know, so give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free at 800-790-0415. I've been using DuckDuckGo more and more to do stuff. Now, you should know, DuckDuckGo actually sends almost all of their requests to Bing, which is Microsoft's search engine. Mm-hmm. But, as I said, it strips out anything that would in any way identify you to Bing. It is entirely anonymous.
Stripped right down.
Right. As far as Bing knows, that request is coming from DuckDuckGo only, and DuckDuckGo only gets the answer, and then they present it to you. So it is safe. So those of you who know that Bing, Microsoft has done a pretty good job of doing what Google does. Of course, Google is still the best at it. For really odd searches, deep dives, esoteric stuff, Google is still much better. There's no question of that. But for the average user, Bing is just as good. But if you don't want to give any of your particulars to either Google or Microsoft, DuckDuckGo is the place to go. And if you want to keep AI out of it entirely, noai.duckduckgo.com is the place to go.
I mean, I love DuckDuckGo, especially when I'm doing, I want to know about this particular product or that product because I'm looking to buy it. If I did that in Google, I would get inundated from now until the end of the year with advertisements about that product. Whereas I'll go to Google if I'm doing research on one specific, say, software package or something else that I need detail.
Right.
It'll go in and it'll pick it out for me. That way I don't get a lot of crud back. But yeah, I keep the two icons are on my desktop right there and I switch between the two.
Even for me, 99.9% of the time, even when I'm looking at a particular software package, I want to go to the website.
Yeah.
I don't need AI to tell me something, I just want to go to the website.
I was looking up something the other day, and the actual company's website was like three quarters down the page.
First, you've got the AI thing. Yep. Then you've got a giant empty space. Then you've got ads.
Yeah.
Then you've got the place you want to go to. No, thank you. NoAI.DuckDuckGo.com. It's right there at the top of the page. You're done.
Well, example of what I've used Chrome for and going in Google. I'll say install a software package. And it comes with a 320-page manual.
Yeah.
And what I'm looking for, and I can, you know, narrow my search down, say, in this particular program, I'm trying to see what these features stand for, because there's abbreviations. It will go into that manual and give me those definitions.
Yep.
I don't get other advertisements about other stuff and everything else, because it's, you know, not relevant to that particular product. So it's good for that. I wouldn't do it, you know, if I'm doing a search on, banking software. One versus the other. Eh.
Right. I am using DuckDuckGo more and more even for that stuff. But yes, look, Google has become a verb.
Mm-hmm.
Which is search, right? Oh, I Googled that the other day. So I get it. Google is search, but it isn't the only search. And if you want to maintain your anonymity, so far the best way to do it is DuckDuckGo.
Remember in the early days?
Well, the best way to do it is going through the Tor network and yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But for the average user, DuckDuckGo.
Yeah.
In the early days, every time a new search engine came out, we would jump to it and ask
try it out. Yeah.
Alta Vista.
Ask Jeeves.
Yeah.
Ask Sam.
Yep.
And then suddenly there was a Google and everyone forgot about everything else.
Yep. Well, Google had the best algorithms, the best search engine, the best web crawler, and the best search algorithms internally to find stuff. Absolutely true. But most of that has been solved by other companies now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you use something like DuckDuckGo, unless, like I said, it's a really oddball or esoteric sort of request that I'm making, DuckDuckGo gives me the answer I want. Super fast, super easy. And in every browser on the market, you can go into the settings and select your default search engine.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, I set it to now, I will admit that there are times when I want to see the AI summary. Then I go to Google.
Mm-hmm.
No question. But not always.
Yeah. Less and less because of the other crud that you wind up getting with it.
Well, one of the problems that they're finding with AI is that they have trained AI on the internet. More and more, what's on the internet is AI slop. So you're teaching more AI slop with AI slop.
Slop. Garbage in, garbage out.
Garbage in, garbage in, garbage in, garbage in. And you're getting massive heaping
dumpster out.
Yep. Dumpsters of garbage out.
And it's
landfills, entire landfills. Yeah.
And it's getting worse and worse in each generation of copying junk.
Right.
Yeah, because a lot of it is so misinformed.
Yep.
I'll be polite.
Yeah.
You know, misinformed on. And it's opinions, and opinions are like belly buttons. Everybody's got one.
And they're all full of lint.
Mm-hmm.
And no one wants to see that.
No one wants to see that.
And, you know, and some folks take that for gospel.
Yep.
Instead of doing any further searching or investigating, you know, they just, it said this. Yeah. And did you do any further check? Well, why should I have to? Okay, if that's the way you want to live your life.
Look, there's a classic exchange on Twitter in the day where this guy was talking about what the meaning of one of Stephen King's books was. And somebody answered him and said, that's not what it means at all. And that first guy said, did you even read the book? The person who had answered him was Stephen King.
Yep.
Good one.
Yeah. And so people have their opinions.
That's where he could get, though, that's where he could really say, did I read it? No. I wrote it.
Yeah, well, everybody else said that. He didn't even have to. 700 or 800 people said, did you even look at the guy who answered you? It is Stephen King, you idiot.
But, no, I could just envision, you know, him, you know, Stephen King coming back and saying, no. And then this person going wild, you know. Well, what authority do you have? Because he didn't recognize Stephen King.
Right.
It's like actors that don't watch their own stuff.
Right.
Well, yeah, I was there when I made it. I don't need to watch it.
Kurt Vonnegut once sat in on a class of his own, of an English teacher talking about his work. And he recognized that Vonnegut was in the back of the room. And he said, could you tell us why you wrote this book? He said, oh, yeah, for the money. That's all. For the money. Well, I sat with Vincent Price one night chatting with him. Mm. And I said, you know, what do you feel about when you see one of your old movies? So, well, I never watch my old movies, but I can tell you exactly about every movie. Doing this movie, let me buy this piece of art. Doing this movie, let me buy this piece of art. Doing this movie, but he could
associated
say,
the artwork
movie,
with the
this art. That's why he did that movie, so he could maintain his art collection. That's what he did.
Okay.
But most writers are writing to earn a living.
Mm-hmm.
Read what you like into it. I just wrote the book. That's fine. You'll see this. Somebody else will see that. It's like you can't cross the same river twice. No two people read the same book. That's simply a fact of life.
Or even if you reread a book.
You're right.
Something else pops up that you skimmed over or really didn't give much thought to in reading it the first time.
I was just hearing a couple of people talk about Project Hail Mary movie.
Yeah.
And the guy was saying, well, don't give any spoilers about the movies. Well, you read the book.
You know what happens.
But the movies are different. Yeah, the movies are different. Don't spoil the movie.
Right. I am a reader. I am definitely a reader. I am delighted to find my daughter's more of a reader than I am. That thrills me to no end.
Let me finish
my thought, which I've now lost. Oh yes,
about
I'm
your
a
daughter.
Reader, and
reader.
So I prefer books to movies. That doesn't mean I don't like the movies. Mm-hmm. And when a movie is different from a book, I don't hate the movie.
Yeah.
It's just a different medium. It has a different audience, and it does different things. I'm okay with it.
It's a different interpretation of the same fact.
Right.
I was reading the Murderbot series after the TV show came out.
Right.
So now I'm up to, like, book five. But while I was waiting for book five, I get them from the library. While I was waiting for the book to come available, I started the Dungeon Crawler Carl series.
Oh, which is great.
Now they're up to book eight, so now I'm okay. Do I finish this series or do I go back and forth?
I'm in the middle of Backyard Spaceship, which has 30 volumes. Yep. 30. And the new Dungeon Crawler Carl came out, which I haven't read yet.
I love the title, A Parade of Horribles.
I'm catching up. I'm catching up.
So Kindle has all 33 books on sale for $225.
Or you can do Kindle Unlimited and read them. I am stealing Kindle Unlimited. I pay my $11.99 a month, but I'm reading $50 worth of books a month. Easy.
Well, that's two books.
Well, you're right. I'm reading about $700 worth of books a month on Kindle Unlimited.
Yep.
I went and looked. You can look up what your stats are.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you've read 58 books this year. Oh, that's low for me. I've been doing other things. My life has been in my way. I have not read as much as I normally do.
Well, that's one thing. My wife thanked me. Matter of fact, just this current trip, I set up her tablet with books.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the train ride from here to where my stepson lives is about a six-hour ride.
Sure.
Got my granddaughter with. So now she can just sit there and read the book. And she goes, this is so relaxing. She goes, the train moving along, and I'm just reading. She goes, time goes by so fast.
Oh, yeah. I have for years carried a Books Poke 5, which is an e-reader, which is an e-ink Android tablet. And that would had all my books on it. But I'm currently using my phone because, thank God, my eyes are still good enough that I can read the phone easily. And it's always with me. And I don't have to look for Wi-Fi to download the next book.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been reading with my phone right now with the Kindle app, which I like. I don't like. Well, that's a separate issue. Amazon is abandoning a whole bunch of Kindles.
Yeah, really upsetting a lot of people.
A lot of people. The problem is that's all e-waste. With some of the really older ones, you could put a version of Android on it, or Graphene OS, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like. With the new ones, they're locked, and you cannot. At least yet. Nobody's figured out how to jailbreak them yet. And so... all you're doing is generating a bunch of e-waste.
Yeah.
In addition, of course, we know that if you don't buy the, even if you buy the book, it is possible that they will take it away from you.
Mm-hmm.
They will just decide you don't own it anymore.
Yeah, because it's no longer on that new device.
That's one of the reasons I like Kindle Unlimited, because I don't have an attachment to it. I just read it and give it back to them, and I don't care anymore. If I really want to buy it, I will actually buy the electronic version or the physical copy, God forbid, the physical copy, and I will always have that.
See, I get into more electronic books.
Yeah, you know, we're all talking electronic. You mean the audiobooks.
Audiobooks, yeah, thank you. Because if I'm doing something, you know, say with the ham radio and that, and I'm just watching the screen. I love listening to the books, and it's very relaxing for me. I've gotten into that, I'd say, in the past 6 months more and more now. Because I'm into World War II and World War I and the history on that, and that's all due to an old history teacher of mine from Charlotte High School, Harvey Holland. I'll never forget, because he was a big-time World War II fanatic. And he got, for my graduation, my history teacher gave me this one book, and I read it, and it was like, oh, yeah, that locked me in, and bam, I wound
up. Good for you. Good for him.
Yeah, he was a great guy. And I, matter of fact, I stayed in contact with him until he passed away. Even after graduation, we'd meet and do, you know, just meet for coffee or lunch or something like that, and it was really special. I worked on his computers a few times and all that. And really hated to see him go.
Yep. I'm much more a visual. I'm a much more a reader because all my life I've had bad hearing, and consequently I can't listen for long. My brain just doesn't. I'm 75 years old. My brain has never spent a lot of time listening because I don't hear well, even with my hearing aids now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm much more visual reader. I had the radio on yesterday while I was writing the news, and I found myself whistling an entirely separate tune. I didn't even know that was possible. But because I don't pay attention to what my ears are hearing.
Mm.
So if you're, you know, if you're a reader, there's a whole lot of free ebooks out there, and a whole lot of inexpensive ebooks out there, and a whole lot of lending libraries. Libby, you can download any book from the library now.
Not any book.
Well, right.
And that's what's very annoying. So the library has to buy their books from the publisher.
Right.
Okay, I get that. So if they want a popular book, they might buy two or three copies. They have to buy a completely separate digital license, and they're limited to how many digital licenses. I was waiting for the next murder bot. It was 18-week wait. There's three copies in use and five people waiting for each copy. But there's no physical reason. You can have, you wouldn't have unlimited digital copies.
It's not physical, it's fiscal.
It's fiscal, yeah.
It's all about the money.
If the library doesn't have the budget to buy that book, then you don't get it.
And
well, that's what's interesting about Libby is you can add multiple libraries in.
Right. And that's the thing about Kindle Unlimited. When I read the book, the author gets, I don't know, a fraction of a penny for every page I read. So they're perfectly happy to put their books up there because if I read the whole 400-page novel,
yep.
You know, they get essentially what their cut would be if I bought it.
Yeah.
So they win. They don't mind. And that's the thing about that. But, yeah, it's all about the money, and I get that. I really do. I don't have to like it, but I get it. And that's the way that works.
And there's one series I read that's Kindle exclusive for like 6 months. And some of the forums, you know, the people complain about it. And the author said, they pay me a crap ton of money to be Kindle exclusive. So, okay. It's very, very hard to make money selling books. There's only a very few rare people that ever hit it big.
I'll tell you, if you're into science fiction, the Bain Free Library, B-A-E-N, yep. The Bain Free Library will get, they're older books, but what Jim Bain did was go to each of these, I think he's passed now, but they went to each of these authors and said, look, we want to just offer these for free. You've made your money off this book. It's 10 years old. How about putting in the library for free? And they did. So there's the Bain Free Library if you're a science fiction reader. And you can read, download and read any of those books you want. All right, that music tells me that we're done. We're done for this week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Matt for that beer can. It's wonderful. I want to thank all of you who listened in. I want to remind you that tomorrow night at 9 p.m., we will be in the lounge. So head on over to soundbites.org, bites with a Y. And you'll see a link to the lounge there, and you can join us at 9 p.m. Again, you do not have to turn on your microphone or your camera. You can be a lurker, and that is perfectly acceptable. You don't have to show your face or use your voice. But we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. This is Soundbites. This is member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in 166 hours.